here tonight about the struggle of the people in Grassy Narrows and their struggle for solidarity, for dignity, and for justice. And since 2002, December, as you saw in the video, there's been a blockade set up in Grassy Narrows, and that was to force an end to the illegal cutting of the trees on the territory of the people of Grassy Narrows. And they're opposing the company that's doing that, which is Abitibi Consolidated. We've got Warren Ashmanas, also from Grassy Narrows. Welcome. And we've got Carl Chaboyer, also from Grassy Narrows. Welcome to you guys.
First of all, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Native Friendship Center of Montreal. It's glad to see such a large turnout on a Sunday and for people to come and to listen to these wonderful people who are doing some wonderful work. One thing for me that was missing this evening, and I figured I would inject that now, is I'd just like everybody to stand up so that we could take a moment to acknowledge our Creator who's brought us here and who's brought these people here and who's been watching over them and watching over all of us. Creator, grandfathers, grandmothers, spirit guides, and all that is unseen and unknown to us, I'd like to thank you for bringing us here together, to bring together all nations without racism, without anything in our ways, but to allow us to gather as you meant us to, as you showed us the medicine wheel.
But as you know, Buju, we say it in Ojibwe as hello, but also the French use it too. So, just to speak about what we're doing right now and also give you a bit of background why the blockade was started. The blockade was last action resort because everything that our people have done has failed, like letters to Indian Affairs, Abitibi Consolidated, provincial, federal governments, and MNR, and all that has failed. And so our people also have went to open house meetings of that Abitibi has held to give presentations on what they had planned in our traditional land use area, which is Whiskey Jack Forest. And to our surprise, attending those meetings, we were told that that even when you attend the meetings and you sign in your names in the front doors, that you're giving part as a consultation and approval of their plans that they have set out for a traditional land use area. That has caught us off guard, and that really got us angry too, that it was used almost like a sneaky movement into getting us to approve their plans. Many of us that day have attended that meeting. They made us feel welcome. Drinks, snacks, big pictures of what they planned for our lands. That was really disappointing hearing that. And attending that meetings too is part of our protest, that we opposed their plans and we just wanted to see what was going on and what they had to benefit on our lands. And it's usually the same, collecting lumber for their profit. And the negative side of that was they don't realize what they're doing. And so when the blockade started, it was supposed to be a one-day blockade. And that day when Joel Fobister came to our school and asked us if we wanted to do a one-day blockade to turn around logging trucks that were destroying our land by taking the trees, contaminating the land through disposal wastes of oils and diesel. And that is a true fact through our contamination study that was done. And during that day, when we turned around two logging trucks, the youth and the young ones stood up, went up to the adults and the elders and asked, hey, why don't we just keep this a permanent blockade instead of having it one day? You don't really accomplish nothing when you just do like a teaser example just for one day of action, a blockade. That really caught the adults off guard, and they're surprised that we wanted to do more than just one day blockade. And so they agreed that they saw the determination of the young ones younger than me. And I think it was mostly the young ones that had the idea. So it is still alive right now.
I got involved in the Grassy Narrows struggle like around 2 years ago. I went down there and found really cool about Grassy, and why I wanted to get involved was it was the youth that actually started the blockade. Because they were fed up with like, I guess, politician talk and negotiations with the band council and this and that, where nothing actually ever really got done. It was just all jibber-jabber. And they took it upon themselves to do direct action.
The reason why I got involved in the blockade is I believe that my community, Grassy Narrows, has been through a lot. Relocation, the residential schools, the mercury contamination, and now it's the clear cutting. I guess growing up, I've lived on and off the reserve my whole life, and growing up, I always thought it was normal to see clear cuts, but as I grew older, I knew it was wrong. I've been involved in the blockade since day one, which is December 3rd, 2002. I guess ever since the blockade started, we've been doing demonstrations and protesting around. This has been a really good experience for me. I've learned a lot.
First time I went there, I was expecting this huge blockade with sandbags, overturned cars, and like people in masks, and like, you know, just like all out like craziness. But really, it was just like a stick across the road with a sign hanging from it. And I was like, you know, like, whoa, you know, this was what it's all about. And it really made me think that you don't need to like have something extreme to make a point and to make a change. Like,
I actually turned around a couple of trucks myself, and the pictures that's on that poster there, that's me in front of that logging truck. Today I was outside for over 15 hours, me and a bunch of other youth and elders. And it was minus 35 that day, and it was really cold. That day we turned around two logging trucks, and I was one of the negotiators, that bad attitude, I guess, towards the loggers, but I didn't mind.
Why am I involved in the blockade? For me, it's mostly to do with a feeling of obligation, an obligation that comes from extremely powerful things that the community of Grassy Narrows has done in the last few years.
When I got out there, there was two logging trucks, and I had asked those trucks to turn around and go back the way they had come, so it was too slippery. Some men from our community had went to the sand pits and got sand and started sanding the road. After they had did that, that contractor was saying, I never said that, I said that. I said that I couldn't make it up the hill, that my load is too heavy and I won't be able to get up. And so I started telling him that we'd tie a chain to the front of his truck. A bunch of us would push it from behind just to make sure that it would make it up.
Against all of this adversity, they still stopped the commercial industrial logging operations. They didn't pick up guns or rocks or sticks or harsh words. Instead, they put their own bodies in front of logging trucks.
That evening, well, he didn't want to move, so that evening there was the OPP came, and they were trying to get our cop to negotiate with us and ask us just to let them through and that they wouldn't come back. And we were telling them that we've been trying to get them out for like years.
If you had the opportunity to be there when little children who have no real idea that the trucks are actually going to stop lay down in front of logging trucks.
But eventually they went back around and they took off, and we followed them all the way to Deer Lake Road. That was one of the things I told the loggers. He said that he wanted to get home, like this was the fastest route, and he wanted to get home to his family. So I was saying, well, you better leave now. You have 7 hours if you want to get home to your family. And but that night, they turned around.
They did not have the backing of the government. They did not have the backing of any government that was in existence at the time. They were working against all of the police forces, and they were working with no resources whatsoever other than their own will and determination and the forces of nature. Some people want to know what it is that they've done that's different than other communities. Why haven't they been arrested? Why haven't the SWAT teams come? Why haven't the riot police come and cleared people away? I'm not really sure. What I've been telling people is what I believe and what I've been told. That hasn't happened because what they're doing is the only right, just, and legal action that's taking place in the forest.
My mother comes from Ojibwe Nation of Saugeen. which is by Savant Lake. My father comes from Mishkigogamang First Nation, which is by Pickle Lake, other known as Ozenberg. We are the last two First Nations that sit under the longitude or latitude of between 50 and 51, so we inhabit all that area. I never heard what a trap line was until I've actually been to a trap line. A trap line is when Canada started putting the natives in reservations. It was a piece of land that was put aside for the families to hunt, fish, gather. Trap. And these are big pieces of land that are given to us, and now they want it back.
What's going on in Grassy Narrows is unspeakable. It can't be allowed to continue. And the Grassy Narrows people, the Ojibwe Anishinaabeg, are not only doing this for themselves, they're also doing it for the entire world.
Our youth right now is, what they're facing right now is the disappearance of our culture. Our culture, our traditions is in a sick state.
Now we have another big issue, which is the St. Raphael Signature Site Provincial Waterway Park. This is one of the nine parks that Ontario is building on traditional territories. I'm pretty sure that most of the people or most of the First Nations don't even know that this is going on. We just found out because someone told us by accident, so we kind of like researched that really fast.
Because of what's happening to our lands, it is keeping us from practicing survival skills, harvesting for blueberries, collecting traditional medicine, which is very important to our elders, who use our land to collect traditional medicine instead of going to town and pick up medicine.
I asked them about the canoe routes, because it's going to be a waterway park. The canoe routes are only supposed to be within the provincial park, but if you look at the map, it's everywhere. Like, it goes right through the reservations, it goes everywhere, without respect to our rights, to our people, to our animals.
And right now, Mother Nature is sick in our area. Imagine that. I know some young ones that experienced this, that there is a day in the early days, that in the morning days, that they're expecting to go out in the forest to be taught by their shumish or their kukam. That's their grandmother, grandfather, or their uncles and aunties, to have a days of lessons on how to survive off the land, get different teachings on how to say plants and trees in our Anishinaabe Ojibwe language. And as they're on their way to the area where they're supposed to get these kind of lessons, imagine this young child looking outside, looking forward to today's lessons. And then once you get to a full stop halt in your vehicle and he's wondering what's going on, he looks outside and he sees what's bothering his Gukam and Shumish. And he notices this big space where there is no trees and the earth is destroyed, where there is no life, no sign of animal life anywhere.
Our elders got kicked off a trap line when they were blueberry picking, an 85 and an 87-year-old woman. Bowwater approached them and told them they had to go. They had to vacate the land that they grew up on, you know, like they raised their families there. They walked 3.7 kilometers back to the highway. The elders got a ride to Sioux Lookout, where they called the grandbabies, which was us. We got so mad, like we were so angry, you know, because they crossed that line of respect.
The elders that still use the land that have no choice but to still hunt, trap, fish, have no choice but to do that because that's what they use the land for. Some don't really have jobs to support their families. There's just so much contaminants in the animals and in the soil that when you look at the contaminant study that Grassy Narrows and Wabuskang and other people that funded this study, that there's just so much chemicals you can't keep track of them. The thing that you see on there, that there's starting to be large amounts of mercury again. In the past, our people have faced mercury contamination. And here again, the levels of the mercury is rising up because of the forestry practices they do. I can't really explain how that is happening.
So we drove to Sioux Lookout to find out exactly why did M&R kick our elders off a trap line, and then we found out about aerial spraying of Vision. Vision is a herbicide pesticide that's sprayed on the land to kill our birch, our poplar, and our grasses, to eliminate the competing vegetation so they can enhance a jack pine and a spruce tree so they can come and harvest them. They already have a 100-year plan, which is called the Lands for Life Legacy, I think it is, or Lands for Life. It's a 100-year plan that was signed in 1997 to 2097. We opposed the aerial spraying because I panicked. All of us panicked. So we started calling everybody like crazy, you know, sending emails. The email actually went to the Prime Minister, like all across Canada, and we didn't receive any response, so we assumed that nobody really cared. So that's when we figured out that we had to look to each other and look within ourselves and realize that we were on our own without no help. We asked M&R to stop. They stopped the aerial spraying for the year 2004, but they're going to come back again the following year. And we're going to put a stop to that again, and we're going to keep coming back every year, and we're going to keep putting a stop. We're going to put a stop to that.